Welcome to the debate. Imagine you're navigating this massive ship through an incredibly dense, treacherous fog.
Oh, I like this analogy already.
Right? So for centuries, humanity has basically relied on a whole crew of navigators for this, where, you know, constantly checking compasses, taking soundings, arguing over the charts.
Which is incredibly slow and messy.
Exactly. It's slow, it's messy, and it is highly fallible. But then a new radar system is installed, and it is just absolutely brilliant. I mean, it sees through the fog perfectly, plotting the safest course in milliseconds.
So obviously the crew starts relying on it.
Completely. But here is the critical question. At what point does the crew just, well, forget how to read the stars? And more importantly, what happens if that radar system, without anyone really realizing it, starts choosing the destination?
That is the big one.
Yeah, and today we're tackling exactly this tension, which is the core theme of Bechara Sahali's 2026 capstone study, Artificial Intelligence and the Epistemic Commons.
A fascinating piece of work, honestly.
It really is. We're looking at the what he calls the augmentation sovereignty dilemma. So this profound tension between using AI to radically expand our civilizational capacity to process information.
Right, the augmentation part.
Yeah, versus the danger of silently transferring political and epistemic authority over to machine infrastructure, the sovereignty part.
So the real question we're getting at is, can human institutions actually separate an AI's computational capability from legitimate authority?
Exactly. Or does our reliance on embedded AI just inevitably transfer that sovereignty to the machine?
Right.
I argue that society can achieve what we call governed epistemic augmentation. Basically, we can harness AI's vast cognitive benefits without surrendering authority, provided we implement rigorous institutional controls and contestable synthesis.
And I argue that the massive asymmetries in material power, compute concentration, and, well, epistemic de-skilling make machine-mediated epistemic sovereignty practically inevitable, because that deep infrastructural dependency covertly strips humans of meaningful independent judgment.
Okay, so to start, I want to ground my perspective in the capability-authority separation principle from the text. We have to clearly distinguish between two types of intelligence here.
Okay, lay them out.
On one hand, you have system intelligence. This is an AI's capacity to optimize, predict, retrieve, or, you know, solve problems within a tightly bounded frame.
Like a predefined objective.
Exactly. And we all know these systems can be extraordinary at this. I mean, they can solve the maze faster than any human alive. But system intelligence is fundamentally different from civilizational intelligence.
Which is the ability to ask, you know, why we are in the maze in the first place.
Precisely. Civilizational intelligence is our distributed, institutionally organized capacity to actually examine those objectives, to question the boundaries of the maze, to figure out who is being excluded, and to define collective ends.
Right. It's the normative piece.
Yeah. So my core position is that just because an AI has superior system intelligence, it does not automatically acquire civilizational intelligence.
You think we can keep them separate?
I do. Through governed openness and really meaningful institutional control, we can treat AI as an incredibly powerful epistemic intermediary. It's a tool, not a sovereign.
I mean, in theory, drawing a neat little line between system intelligence and civilizational intelligence sounds wonderfully clean.
But you don't buy it.
I look at the reality of the infrastructure threshold, and I just see how embedded daily practice simply destroys that theoretical boundary.
How so? I mean, where does it break down for you?
Well, the threshold is crossed when a system becomes critical to an institution's basic functioning, when there is durable dependency.
Right.
And when substituting or recovering that capability becomes practically impossible without the AI. Once an AI crosses that threshold, the separation of capability and authority is just a complete fiction. What we actually get is institutional warrant laundering.
Okay, let's pause there, because institutional warrant laundering is a really heavy term. Break that down for someone who might not be steeped in, you know, administrative theory.
Sure. So think of it exactly like money laundering, but for authority.
Okay.
When you launder money, you take dirty cash, you run it through a complex
seemingly legitimate business structure, and it comes out the other side looking perfectly clean and, you know, legally untraceable.
Right.
Institutional warrant laundering works the same way. You take a legally sketchy human decision, maybe an unproven bureaucratic hunch or a deeply biased assumption, and you run it through a multi-billion parameter neural network.
And because the AI's output is so fluent.
Exactly. It's fluent, it's incredibly detailed, and it's operating at massive scale. So that shaky initial assumption comes out the other side looking like clean, objective, unquestionable math.
I see.
The technical performance of the model is effortlessly converted into normative political authority. The institution stops defending its underlying logic and just points to the machine and says, well, the algorithm says so.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective. Pointing to the algorithm is a choice. We can mandate what Sahali calls contestable synthesis.
Which means what exactly?
It means using AI to integrate massive amounts of complex evidence, sure, to reduce our cognitive burden, but while strictly preserving the provenance of the data.
Right.
We can legally demand that the system explicitly shows its uncertainty and highlights dissenting viewpoints.
But they don't, because of epistemic de-skilling.
You think they just lose the ability?
Absolutely. As institutions become entirely dependent on these highly concentrated AI stacks for their basic visibility into reality, they quite literally forget how to do the math. They lose the ability to judge independently.
But there's still human oversight.
Is there? Without genuine public countercapacity, meaning the independent hardware, the data, and the human expertise to actually run alternative models and challenge the providers, formal human authority is nothing more than responsibility theater.
Responsibility theater.
Yeah. We might stamp a human name on a government document, but the machine is governing.
See, you're describing a failure of human governance there, not an inevitable feature of the technology itself. Let's look at how this actually plays out in public administration, because I know you see Australia's robo-debt scheme as the, you know, ultimate proof of this danger.
It absolutely is. I mean, robo-debt wasn't even modern generative AI. It was a relatively simple rule-based automation system, but it perfectly illustrates what computational scale does to institutional power.
Because the government used automated data matching to infer overpayments.
Yes, they used data matching and income averaging to claim welfare recipients had been overpaid.
And just to clarify the mechanism there for everyone, income averaging meant taking someone's annual income reported to the tax office and just dividing it evenly across 26 fortnightly pay periods.
Exactly.
Completely ignoring the reality that vulnerable people often work gig jobs, irregular shifts, or seasonal work.
Precisely. It was a legally defective premise from the start, but because it was automated, they scaled that defective premise to generate $1.763 billion in asserted debts.
Against what? Hundreds of thousands of people?
Against roughly 433,000 people. This is a textbook case of epistemic foreclosure.
Meaning the system closed off any other way of knowing the truth.
Right. The system made alternative evidence practically inconsequential. The burden of proof was entirely shifted. Instead of the government proving you owed them money, vulnerable citizens had to somehow produce years-old, wrinkled payslips to prove the machine wrong.
Which is incredibly difficult.
And the formal human review you mentioned? The so-called responsibility theater? It was a complete failure. First-tier tribunal decisions questioned the averaging, but those decisions were private. They didn't generate public precedent.
They were just isolated cases.
Exactly. The human reviewers were overwhelmed by the sheer scale of the machine's output, and the overarching rule didn't change until massive, tragic harm was already done. The automation scaled an authoritative but weakly warranted rule, removed actual evidentiary inquiry, and fragmented responsibility.
So the machine became the sovereign authority, in your view?
The machine became the sovereign authority.
I'm just not convinced by that line of reasoning. Because you are, I think, attributing human malice to the concept of automation itself. I look at robo-debt, and I see a catastrophic failure of human rules, full stop.
But the automation enabled it.
Sure, but it was human ministers and human agency executives who authorized that legally defective premise. It was human actors who decided to shift the burden of proof onto the citizens to save money.
But they could only do it because the automation provided the shield.
The automation provided scale, yes. But the governance failure was human. Consider high-reliability domains like aviation.
Okay, let's talk about aviation.
In aviation, we don't ban the autopilot just because automated systems can fail or because pilots occasionally experience automation bias. We rely on autopilot because it's vastly safer.
But aviation is highly regulated.
Exactly. We build better institutional stop rules. We require redundancy, intense logging, and the absolute authority of the human pilot to reach over and just turn the system off. A pilot doesn't lose sovereignty to the autopilot because they retain the physical controls and the manual skill to fly the plane.
But that is exactly my point about descaling. In the modern administrative state, we are increasingly ripping the manual controls out of the cockpit. We aren't training the pilots anymore.
Only if we fail to enforce the responsibility non-transfer principle.
Which is a nice idea on paper.
It's vital. You can delegate the operational execution to a machine, but you absolutely cannot extinguish the public answerability of the institution. The agency must remain responsible for the consequences.
But they don't want to be.
Well, if the creators of RoboDead had enforced dual error governance, which is the recognition that the severity of a false positive against a vulnerable citizen is vastly more damaging than a false negative for the agency's budget, the system would have been stopped on day one.
But it wasn't.
Right. But RoboDebt doesn't prove that governed automation is impossible. It proves why we need strict institutional guardrails.
They abdicated those guardrails because the scale of the automation made it financially and politically irresistible to do so. The math hid the negligence.
So you think the temptation is just too great?
Exactly. But okay, you're arguing RoboDebt is just a case of bad human intent and bad rules. Let's look at a scenario where the AI's intent is undeniably good, the system is high-performing, and the results are seemingly open. Let's talk about scientific discovery.
Oh, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is where the capability-authority separation really shines. Look at the AlphaFold protein structure database. This is highlighted as a massive triumph of the Epistemic Commons.
It is certainly a powerful tool, I won't deny that.
It is revolutionary. AlphaFold is a privately originated capability from DeepMind, sure, but it was institutionally composed with the European Molecular Biology Laboratory's intergovernmental body.
Right.
As of 2026, this database hosted over 241 million UniProt-aligned predictions, and it is not locked behind some corporate paywall. The outputs are licensed under Creative Commons BY 4.0.
The outputs are yes.
And the code for AlphaFold 2 is open source. It provides incredibly rich provenance and confidence metrics. But most importantly, the system remains highly falsifiable.
In what way?
AlphaFold doesn't declare the absolute truth of a protein structure. It generates highly accurate hypotheses that prioritize and accelerate physical, wet lab experiments. The human experiment still validates or overturns the machine's prediction.
So the scientists still have the final say.
Exactly. It proves conclusively that a privately originated, highly concentrated capability can be safely socialized. We can reap the massive cognitive benefits of AI and science without giving the machine scientific sovereignty. The scientific method remains the ultimate authority.
I come at it from a totally different way, because the AlphaFold example actually perfectly exposes infrastructural captivity.
Captivity? How? The code is open source and the database is free to download.
Yes, the outputs are openly licensed. But look at the material reality beneath the surface of that open license. Reproducing just the complex predictions corpus in 2026 would require roughly 17 million GPU hours.
Which is, I admit, a massive amount of compute.
It is a staggering, practically insurmountable bottleneck for independent science. If you want to verify the model from scratch or, you know, tweak its fundamental assumptions to see if it missed something, you can't just run it on a university server.
You need serious hardware.
You need a billion-dollar data center. The open weights and the open outputs are just the very tip of the AI epistemic commons stack. Beneath that, the material supply chain, the raw energy demands, the advanced lithography to make the chips, the high bandwidth memory, and the specialized upstream expertise, all of that remains entirely concentrated in the hands of a few private entities.
But do we really need every single university to have a billion-dollar data center?
If we want true epistemic independence, yes.
What happens if the private partner changes its terms, or pivots its business model, or simply withdraws support?
Well, the data is already downloaded.
But the global scientific community completely lacks the public countercapacity to maintain or regenerate that corpus at scale moving forward. We are looking at a system that socializes the outputs of concentrated capability while keeping the capability itself locked up.
I wouldn't call that captivity, though.
That is not an epistemic commons. It is a very comfortable, highly productive form of captivity, but it is captivity nonetheless.
That's an interesting point, though I would frame it differently, because you are demanding absolute autarky.
Autarky?
Complete, isolated self-sufficiency. That is impossible in modern knowledge production anyway. We always rely on a division of labor. We don't demand that every astronomer build their own James Webb Space Telescope from scratch to trust the images it sends back.
But the James Webb Telescope is publicly funded and publicly governed. AlphaFold's underlying compute is private.
True, but this is why we distinguish between available plurality and usable plurality. We don't necessarily need the 17 million GPU hours to rebuild AlphaFold from scratch as long as we have the independent, usable ability to falsify its outputs through physical experiments.
The wet labs, wet. The epistemic independence is preserved in the scientific method itself. Justified reliance on a difficult-to-reproduce capability is perfectly sound, provided the outputs are contestable.
But a division of labor implies a somewhat balanced interdependency. This is an extreme material asymmetry. I mean, the global electricity share of data centers is pushing toward roughly 950 terawatt hours by 2030.
It's definitely resource intensive.
We are talking about massive local burdens. Communities are losing access to water for cooling and facing grid strain, all to support capabilities that remain firmly under private control. You simply cannot separate the cognitive benefit of a system from the material extraction required to run it.
I see the environmental and material concern. If a public institution cannot physically run an alternative model because it lacks the hardware and the energy, then its formal authority is severely compromised.
I hear you. But let's take this tension away from protein folding and into what is arguably the most sensitive arena of all, democratic deliberation.
Oh, okay.
Can AI mediate human disagreement itself? There is fascinating research on deliberative augmentation, specifically looking at the Habermas machine experiments.
I read about those.
Right, which involved over 5,700 participants.
This is where the risk of the machine choosing the destination becomes acutely real.
But look at the mechanism. The goal here wasn't to solve a math problem. It was to use AI to map complex arguments and detect common ground among participants with deeply divergent political views.
So an AI mediator?
Yes. And the AI was able to integrate these arguments, translate hostile or highly technical language into clear propositions, and actually identify points of consensus significantly better than unaided human mediators.
Better in what sense?
Humans get fatigued. They lose track of threads. The AI didn't. And the key safeguard here is the deliberative non-sovereignty principle.
Which means what, practically?
It means the AI only proposes this synthetic consensus. The public still formally authorizes it. The human participants review the AI summary and can amend it, reject it, or revoke it.
So you're saying they're still in charge?
Exactly. As long as that authorization loop remains intact, we are safely enhancing public reason. We are using the machine to map the territory, not to dictate the law.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. That authorization loop is an absolute illusion.
How so?
They literally vote on it.
The Habermas machine experiments were small, time-bounded, and heavily controlled. More importantly, we have to look at the illusion of synthetic consensus. Research by Hackenberg and colleagues exposes a direct structural trade-off in large language models.
The trade-off between persuasion and accuracy.
Right. As they are fine-tuned to become more persuasive and conversational, their factual accuracy actually drops.
But we aren't using them for factual retrieval in this context. We're using them for mediation.
Which is even more dangerous, because they persuade without you knowing it. Look at William Cece's research on autocomplete. They found that something as simple as a biased autocomplete function, just suggesting the next three words in a sentence, actively shifted users' attitudes on complex societal issues.
Surely if you warn the users, they adjust for it. That's the terrifying part. The users didn't even notice it was happening, and explicit warnings beforehand did not neutralize the effect.
Wow, really?
Yes.
AI mediators do not just passively map the territory. They actively, invisibly shape it by framing what the acceptable options are and smoothing over the rough edges of human debate to produce a, you know, polite summary. They manufacture a synthetic consensus that effectively erases minority dissent.
You see it as erasure.
Completely. The slick interface preserves the illusion of agreement while making the underlying, unresolved political friction disappear. That is agenda sovereignty in action.
That is a compelling argument, but I have to push back on your baseline here. You are holding AI to a standard of absolute pristine neutrality that human mediators have literally never met.
Human mediators are flawed, sure.
Human facilitators are constantly plagued by their own biases. They get tired, they set backroom agendas, they subtly steer conversations toward their preferred outcomes through body language or selective rule enforcement.
But that's visible.
Is it? If we demand that an AI be completely free of influence before we use it, we are ignoring the messy reality of how human deliberation already works.
A human chairman's biases can be interrogated. You can read their face. You can vote them out of the room.
And a contestable AI synthesis can be engineered to be far more transparent than a human's internal thought process.
More transparent?
Yes. Imagine an AI mediator that provides mathematically traceable citations for every point it summarizes. An AI that explicitly labels its causal uncertainty, prominently displays credible counter-evidence, and allows users to demand alternative viewpoints on the fly.
Okay, I see the appeal.
That system is significantly more accountable than a human committee operating behind closed doors.
It might be more transparent in its user interface, but it is infinitely more opaque in its underlying architecture. How do you, as an average citizen, interrogate the multidimensional weightings of a proprietary large language model?
Well, you can't read the weights directly, no.
You can't, and citizens know this. There was a representative German experiment that found a distinct AI penalty in democratic settings. Simply describing a deliberation as being AI facilitated drastically reduced people's willingness to even participate.
Really? It lowered participation?
Yes, and it lowered their expectation of the quality of the outcome.
That sounds like a temporary trust issue, though, not a structural impossibility. People adjust to new technologies.
Trust dictates who even enters the public sphere in the first place. If people feel the synthesis of their political will is being manufactured by a machine they don't understand, run on a 17 million GPU hour data center they can't access, they will simply exit the democratic process.
They'll opt out.
Exactly. And that brings us right back to the core issue. If participants use a provider-dependent system to find their common ground, they have outsourced the very formation of their political will to an infrastructure they do not control.
This is exactly why evaluating the whole configuration is so vital. Evaluating an AI model as a standalone technical artifact, just looking at the algorithm, is entirely useless. We have to evaluate the entire AI-mediated epistemic configuration.
I completely agree with you there.
Right. So that means we have to look at the data extractors, the compute supply chains, the user interfaces, the institutional workflows, and the legal liabilities all at once.
The whole stack.
The whole stack. And while I acknowledge the massive risks of material concentration and epistemic deskilling that you've laid out today, my summary position is that human institutions can survive this infrastructure threshold.
How? What does that actually look like in practice?
By establishing polycentric constitutional ecologies.
Another heavy term. Break that one down.
It's a way of saying we don't just rely on one master AI or one tech monopoly. We build a network of overlapping, competing institutions, some human, some machine, that check and balance each other.
So systemic redundancy.
Exactly. We can build systems that expose provenance. We can legally demand that human authorization remains necessary for any coercive action, exactly to prevent another robo-debt. We can treat AI as a profoundly powerful participant in the epistemic commons without ever allowing it to become the sovereign over it.
And my summary is that until we actually solve the stark material realities of this technology, governed augmentation is going to remain a very comforting illusion for the intellectual class.
An illusion.
Yes. As long as we have 950 terawatt hour energy projections, insurmountable hardware barriers to reproduce scientific corpuses, and a near monopoly on upstream compute, we are structurally captive.
because of the gravity of the threshold.
The gravity of the infrastructure threshold is simply too strong. When a system becomes deeply embedded in how an institution perceives reality, evaluates evidence, and remembers its own history, that technical capability naturally solidifies into unquestioned authority.
It just overtakes us.
Without true public countercapacity, the actual physical ability to unplug from the proprietary stack and run a viable alternative, we are just a crew watching a brilliant radar screen, pretending we still know how to sail the ship.
Well, it seems we do find convergence on the absolute necessity of evaluating the entire supply chain and configuration, rather than getting distracted by the illusion of the standalone algorithm.
Absolutely.
The material substrate, the physical chips, and the energy matters just as much as the neural network weights. And there is so much more to explore in this framework that we couldn't cover today.
Definitely. We didn't even get to the CARE principles for indigenous data sovereignty.
Oh, right. Collective benefit, authority to control, responsibility, and ethics.
Yes. Those principles so powerfully challenge the default assumption that all knowledge should just be globally open.
Which is a huge part of the commons debate.
It is. It reminds us that legitimate governance often requires withholding data to protect vulnerable communities from extractive models.
Exactly. It forces us to ask, who receives the benefit of uncertainty? The powerful institution or the marginalized citizen?
It's a remarkably dense and thought-provoking study.
It really is. We started today by talking about a crew navigating through the fog, relying on a brilliant new radar system.
The radar that might be steering the ship?
Right. A question remains. Can we use the radar to see through the fog while ensuring we never lose our ability to read the stars, question the charts, and most importantly, decide for ourselves where the ship is actually going?
That is the ultimate question.
We will leave it to you to decide if our institutions are up to this task.